This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. I'd like to thank our sponsors who make our podcast possible. We tape our podcast with the ongoing support of Raider and Jason Sikora, our sound engineer. Raider is a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. Iberia Bank and First Horizon, who are now one bank. Two relationship-driven banks, both leaders in the industry, have officially joined forces. The combination of Iberia Bank and First Horizon creates a leading financial services company dedicated to enriching the lives of their clients, associates, and their communities. I'd also like to thank Lafayette General Health, who has joined the Ochsner Health family and is now Ochsner Lafayette General. As one health system, Ochsner Lafayette General will provide expanded services and enhanced care from the familiar faces you already trust. Ochsner Lafayette General means more resources to help solve healthcare's toughest problems, reinvesting in our communities, and being further committed to health and wellness. Ochsner Lafayette General. Together means more. Learn more today at togethermeansmore.org. Dan Jurek, licensed professional counselor and marriage and family specialist, is our guest. He has more than 35 years of experience in adult counseling and marriage and couples counseling. Dan's practice is guided by his Franciscan spirituality, following Christ in the footsteps of St. Francis of Assisi. He started Pax Renewal Center in Lafayette almost 2 decades ago as he realized that counseling services were just as vital to a person's health as exercise and nutrition. Today, Pax offers a range of counseling services for individuals as well as the entire family. Dan Jurek, it's my pleasure to welcome you to Discover Lafayette.
It's good to be here, Jan.
Yeah. So you are known in the community, I think for people that need help, that you are a go-to guy that can really help couples. And I, you know, when we say marriage, there's so many people that are in relationships that I don't want to just think of this as a marriage counselor. But you are well known and respected for the results that you can bring in getting people to communicate. And whether or not they stay married, I think the respect that they can learn and communication, you've got a proven track record. We're sitting here at the end of April, a full year after COVID shut everything down, and I thought it would be a good time to let you introduce yourself to the community, but also to talk about what has happened to the family unit and how everyone from mom, dad, grandparents, kids, and others have been affected, and maybe what you've learned and what you're anticipating as we emerge from this cocoon.
I love that. Such a nice, wide-open question.
Yeah, you can just go anywhere, Dan.
Right, that's great.
And we did meet at Red's. I got to get in a plug. They're next right. door, but you're a cold
for
plunge
buddy,
guy.
Yeah, I'm a cold plunge guy every day. He was there this morning.
Yeah. Talk about your background,
well,
how you
yeah,
got into this.
Jurek is not a Cajun name.
No.
It's a Polish name. My wife and I are both from just outside of Chicago. I was raised in Naperville, Illinois, and actually the home of Sean Payton, the Saints.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sean went to Naperville Central School, a few years younger than he's a few years younger than I am. But in college, both my wife and I, we weren't married yet, but we both went to Steubenville, Ohio, where I attended Franciscan University, and so did she. I got my degree in theology and a master's degree in Catholic theology and started teaching religion and was part of a Catholic community where we worked with youth ministry and families and couples and to keep that long story short, in 1990, my wife and I, and at that time, two of our children moved here to Lafayette, and I began working at St. Thomas More High School.
They recruited you?
Well, like I said, long story short, one Mr. Mike Keefe, who's still mm-hmm. at St. Thomas More, he knew me through the youth conferences in Steubenville and had come out the summer that he moved here and said they were looking for a campus minister. Would I be interested? Now, originally, when he said Lafayette, I thought Lafayette, Indiana.
You did.
So I said, yeah, Mike, that'd be great because it'd be only about, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours from my family in Chicago. And he looked at me with that strange looking face and like, oh, no.
The flight's longer than that.
It's a long, I actually had to get out a map and figure out where Louisiana was. But yeah, so I came down here, interviewed, and they offered me the job. Mm-hmm. And Jane and I moved here in 1990, and I worked in the campus ministry program for 5 years. And then I went to Our Lady of Wisdom Church and Catholic Student Center at the UL campus and worked as a campus minister there for a couple of years with Father Hampton Davis. And then went back to St. Thomas More when Father Davis went to Notre Dame to work at the seminary. Went back to St. Thomas More and was religion administrator, guidance counselor, drug testing coordinator. And in all that time, I went back and got my second master's degree at Our Lady of Holy Cross College in New Orleans. So then started my practice. Once I was able to get my license to practice counseling as a professional counselor, started in 2003. Pax Renewal Center. It was me, myself, and I. It was.
Were you in this building off of?
No, I originally actually started in the 1602 Pinhook, which is where the family tree is now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I was on the third
over
floor.
Over by Chili's, kind of in that area.
Yeah, in between Chili's and Outback. And that's where I started. And at that time, they were renovating, and there was no heat in the third floor. I mean, no air conditioning in the third floor, and it got hot. Mm-hmm. So I really desperately looked for a place to move and found this place over here right behind, snuck behind Red's.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It's just a perfect location. And then over the last several years, we have been growing. We've been bringing on different associates who can bring on different who can meet the different needs of folks. Right now, Roy Pettifees does most of his work with teens and is kind of the guru and the expert in that area. We have Jules Arsenault, who does a lot of spiritual counseling and works with addiction and life transition issues. Najwa Dibbs works with trauma and EMDR and a lot of issues related to that anxiety. Claire Masek Haydel, who is one of our PLPCs, which means she's still earning her license, but she is doing a fantastic job with folks who wrestle with severe anxiety, OCD. Candace Hansen has been with me. She and Roy have been with me the longest, and Candace is our play therapist and works with kids, but also does couples work. And hope I'm not forgetting any. But then we've got some graduate interns now who are so exciting to have them here, because one of my hopes and one of my goals for Pax Renewal Center is that we could meet the needs of as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. And some people just can't afford counseling. They can't afford even the co-payment. We don't take insurance, but our graduate students who, you know, they're so well prepared. And
that's good experience, too.
That's great experience. Yeah. And they're under my supervision and my training. They get to work with folks at an incredibly reduced fee.
Yeah.
And they're getting great results. Uh-huh. So, since 2003, uh-huh. we've been going great. Now, COVID did hit us. And
the whole field, right? Like, it was very difficult to meet with people under the guidelines.
Oh, yeah. It hit everybody hard. We all, like most of the world, we figured out what Zoom was and how to do mm-hmm. Zoom calls. And
did people like that, or do they prefer to be in person?
At first, I think people saw it as, oh, this is nice. But there is such an impersonal experience. Mm-hmm. with virtual, that you can't be in another's presence and felt presence. You can't.
And then you see yourself, too.
Right.
You know, like it's kind of a weird
dynamic. Right, you're
dynamic.
Also looking at the video that's shining back at you and a little self-conscious. And then for me as a therapist, I don't like it because you don't know this about me, but I like to move on my chair and I like to get close to my couples and lean in and even my individuals. And I just want them to feel the connection and, mm-hmm. and the contact. And so it was kind of what we just all had to do. Now, folks, at first we were all in shock. And so a lot of people canceled appointments and we're trying to figure out, okay, what are we doing with our kids and what are we doing with our work? What are we doing? Yeah. Do we have work? And so it really got, I will say, slow all through the summer, spring and summer of last year. And then when schools were either deciding to open up, to not open up, parents were getting fed up with, are our kids going to be here? Are our kids not going to be home? It just became very stressful, mm-hmm. enormously stressful. Not to mention the political unrest. I mean, we can go on. And really, since September, the practice has picked up and is now good. Overflowing in a mm-hmm. in a way that I'm very grateful for, but I don't like to see so many folks in pain.
So with the shutdown, you know, before we started the interview, I was saying we have older children. Ours are 22 and 28, but the one that's in college at LSU, she was home a lot and so stressful, all the things you're mm-hmm. talking about, the internet not being good enough for her classes online at LSU and dropping connections during a test, you know, a critical test for her grades. I can only imagine the stress of a young family that's got maybe two or three little people mm-hmm. in elementary school. They're all having to be online. The parents both need to work to pay their bills. They might have had issues before that are just compounded by everybody being on top of each other or tripping over themselves, you know. Can you touch on that? Like, you know, how can you even help people that are physically challenged like that and emotionally challenged?
It's first the overwhelm that we all feel, right? And I give it a lot of names, but it's stacking. When it's enough when you're carrying your load and it's heavy, but then when you have other things stacking on top, mm-hmm. It becomes overwhelming. The strongest person can only carry so much weight, right? The strongest person can only carry so much weight, and it became a lot. A lot of families enjoyed that little break every day where Mom and Dad could go to work and the kids were either going to school or daycare, and it gave everyone a little breath to come up for air. That was gone. Mm-hmm. Now parents are not just having to be parents and full-time or part-time employees, but now they're having to be teachers. And they're having to be IT professionals because we all had to learn how to become efficient in technology, not just... Mm-hmm. And then we all had to go through a big expenditure of we don't have enough computers in the home. We don't have enough technology in the home. And that's just for what I would call the healthy
unit. Yeah.
The healthy family, uh-huh. right? The family that, you know, is just going through life and has its ups and downs. The struggles are there, but now they are exacerbated. Then you take a family where, as you said earlier, the couple was already strained. The relationship was already mm-hmm. strained. And now the two have no escape. Now they're expected to be together and they have no real way of working out the problem. So it gets worse. Oftentimes the confinement of all the kids in the house, if parenting is a struggle, if raising one or a few of the kids is a struggle, it just amps all that energy up in a real distressing way. And so families where there was more dysfunction, where there was more unhealthy relating, that too exacerbated. So, you know, the thing that, you know, breaks my heart and has broken my heart and we continue to work with are those families that were in abusive homes. Mm-hmm. That abuse escalated. It may have just gone, but it may have gone from emotional abuse to now physical abuse. It may have been minor, now it is severe. Kids who got their only really good square meal at school weren't getting that. kids who needed to get out of the house because home was not a safe environment. They couldn't get out. Parents couldn't protect their kids from an abusive spouse or family member. And again, the stress just kept going up. And then all the unknown. So again, September brought in this of 2000 brought in a lot more counseling opportunities for families and kids, and especially couples, because that's what I really work with the most. But it brought in a whole different set of problems. Even for me, trying to do couples therapy online, you know, you're in my office, so you see I've got a couple chairs and I've got the couch. Mm-hmm. Well, couples that are in distress usually don't sit next to each other on the couch, right? But when they're looking at me on camera, they got to almost be shoulder to shoulder, and they're not getting along with each other. So that's a unique dynamic. And you know, just those little nuances that you don't think about. I kind of like it because it tells me what's going to happen. But there's also that nonverbal body language that I can't see. I don't know whose legs are shaking. I don't know who's clenching their fists. I don't, right? I don't know what's happening. I just get from the chest up. And so it really brought a lot of challenge for us as therapists to try and find a way to be efficient and effective with our clients, but with a whole different modem, right? A whole different way of doing it.
Is it similar to traumatic events such as hurricanes or tornadoes where somebody loses everything? Or it seems like a lot bigger emotionally, but are events like this pandemic, is it like that kind of thing where you lose somebody to a... You know, the whole family gets killed in a car wreck or something, like where it's just so traumatic and unexpected?
Yes.
Because I can't imagine your training really prepared you for a pandemic per se.
No, it doesn't train us for a pandemic, but what I'm really naming is trauma.
Yeah.
We have all been traumatized this last year and a half. Trauma isn't, you know, it's always violent, but trauma is... the fear even of losing your job, the fear of physical or emotional violence, the fear of social unrest in a nation, all that is traumatic, not to mention two big hurricanes that ripped through, you know, in August. And, you know, it just didn't want to let up at all. And that stress has really created more than just anxiety, more than just depression, it is much more of a trauma effect. Couples were traumatized. Trying to raise a family in this unique was traumatizing. And so the use of substances rose, the use of other addictive behaviors rose.
What is that?
Well... whether it's overeating, undereating, too much exercise, absolutely none. Whether it's other processed addictions like, internet pornography, of course, but not just pornography, but getting lost in hours and hours of binge watching, right?
Oh, no. Who would do that?
Who would do that?
Thank you, Netflix.
That's right. Call the Midwives was one of our favorites.
We laugh, but I mean, it's an escape.
But it was real. It becomes this escape. Instead of having to talk with anybody, I'm just going to go spend the whole evening just keep hitting next one so that I don't have to deal with the problem, think about the problem.
Joe Exotica.
But what it does is it just numbs us. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean the pain isn't there. It's just been numbed, right? And so after a while, you start feeling again. And then they want you to go back to work, or we got to get back into a routine. And, you know, my grandson is now playing baseball. And so, you know, mom and dad got to get ready for games. But then we got to play, you know, do the COVID thing. You know, people got to wear masks and, you know, it's all what we have to do, but this is all traumatizing. And so for us as therapists, even I know for me, my modality is really working to assess what level, if any, trauma a couple has, an individual has, a family has, not just before COVID, but what trauma could have taken place. that makes it even more challenging, right?
How do you diagnose? You were talking about body language. Is it the voice? Is it the facial expressions? Like, are most people honest? Do they really show up and just start telling you their deepest, darkest secrets?
Well, let's go back to that. And the answer is yes and no. Yes, in that when someone calls to come to counseling, it is probably one of the most courageous things they've ever had to do. Because they've had to pick up the phone, call a place that they may have gotten a recommendation from, a priest or a friend or a clergy person or somebody, you know, some neighbor. Oh, you got to give them a call. But that person is in distress somehow, some way. Mm-hmm. And they're calling for help to a person they don't even know, right? So that in and of itself takes enormous amount of courage. So the motivation is high to come. And the motivation to feel better is high. Mm-hmm. And I say motivation usually only comes from one of two places. It either comes through inspiration or desperation, or a combination of both, right?
I bet there's a lot of desperate
when we're desperate, people. We are more motivated to come in here and want change. Mm-hmm. Or at least, maybe not change, but we want to feel better. That doesn't necessarily mean change will happen. And so to answer your, you know, come back to your question, Jan, yeah, when they come in, they are honest about their pain. And that's how we assess it. What is happening? What are you experiencing? Sleeplessness, easily agitated, depressed. You feel frantic. You feel out of control. You can't eat or you can't stop eating. We go through a whole list of questions of what's happening in your life. How are your relationships? Oh, I'm not getting along with my husband or my wife. I'm not getting along with my family. I haven't seen my friends in months. I feel like I'm all alone, right? So we take all of those things and through our clinical training, assess it and try not so much to diagnose an illness, but to help understand a problem for a solution. And once we can help first hear the problem, validate it's real, because a lot of us think, I'm just overreacting. I'm just underreacting.
Everybody's got problems.
Everyone's got problems. Why can't I handle mine? Which is just a false narrative, right? A lot of us aren't handling our problems well. That's why we are a very compulsive, addicted, moody people, especially in these last several months. Mm-hmm. We are just, our moods are higher and lower. Our compulsions are to, if we can't go out, let's go buy more stuff for the house, right?
It's been a boon for retailers, online retailers.
Yeah, online, Amazon, yeah. Wish we had stock there. Mm-hmm. But the emotional toll it has taken. There's the other element that I find fascinating, too, is that when everything stopped a year ago March, everything stopped except people's minds. And so if you were just ignoring all that inner work and all that inner turmoil that might be going on, trying to forget things, trying not to handle or think about real problems that felt overwhelming, you had no choice but to deal with them. Because all you could do is sit home, sit in the backyard, go for a walk. Yeah. And a lot of the struggles just bubbled up like a volcano. And people did not know how to manage. So, again, when we started opening up a little bit, the phones were ringing more and more. But what I find so helpful is, even though we've been with families, even though there's been a lot of feeling of isolation. There's been a lot of feeling of I'm in this all alone. A lot of fear of what's happening to our economy, what's happening to the lives of people who are dying seemingly every day, what's happening to our nation as we had to go through the George Floyd event that really stirred up the pot.
And then social media, people at home, so I know it was divisive before, but the COVID has almost become a political football
And
not a scientific disease.
We've lost our way to dialogue, as really, and you know, because it's become so polarized, and people have felt that. The gift, I believe, about counseling, the gift that I believe that we can bring either to an individual, to a couple, to family, is to help them feel heard and validated, that your journey is real, and that if we really take a look at how you feel, it's affecting what you do, and if we look at what you do, we can change what you do, and therefore we can help change how you feel. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Dan, on that note, I'd like to pause for a moment. One of our past interviews was with Marie Collins of the Family Tree, who's a wonderful young woman, a great counselor. And Marie also spoke of the courage it can take for people just to make the decision to ask for help in therapy. Mm. And she explains in this little clip that the more we hold inside, the more issues we just hold on to, it multiplies in our head. But the answers are inside of us. And she says that counselors can help you. They're not magicians, but they can help you put together the puzzle pieces of your own life in the way that makes sense for you. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to Marie.
So the first brave step is just saying that you want to come to counseling. It takes a lot of courage to say that you need help. And then so just to sign up and walk through that door. And even as a counselor, and I do this for a living, there are times where I forget, oh, wait, I need to go to counseling because I'm carrying around too many things myself. And I need to walk through that door and have the courage to say I need help. And so, you know, hats off to all those people who have done that or who will do that, because it does take an act of bravery. And so to walk through those doors and to sit in front of someone and to trust the process and say talking does help. Being able, what you hold inside multiplies in your head. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And what you tell gets divided by all the people you tell it to, because everybody carries a piece for you. And so what I saw myself as a counselor is I wasn't there just there for them to unload the information. The answers are inside of you. The counselor isn't some magician. I mean, our wands are all in the shop, unfortunately. And so what we're doing is helping you as an individual put those puzzle pieces together. And so I saw it like a puzzle. Okay, this happened and this happened. And so now the wiring in your brain has now created you to believe this thought. And so how do we help you unconnect those connections? But it was a puzzle and the answers were inside of you. I just asked the questions to get you to that point.
Welcome back to Discover Lafayette with Dan Jurek. So we've been talking about the past year and what you've seen. When you take COVID out of it, are the issues still about communication, or is a lot of it actions that individuals need to take, like physical actions, to help them have the ability to communicate? I mean, does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
It's a really complex answer, but I will break it down to, and this is also my theory, my theoretical pinning, is attachment and connection. When we don't feel attached and connected to ourselves, we get lost. When we don't feel attached or connected to a spouse or a lover, and we feel that disconnect, that non-detachment, that is traumatizing in and of itself, but it is also puts you in that spin of I'm all alone.
Even though I'm surrounded by others.
The one person that is supposed to be safe, the one place that's supposed to be safe doesn't feel safe, whether that's in my own soul or whether that's in my home or whether that's in my community or my nation. And so to me, communication then breaks down because we're no longer in dialogue. We're in these survival monologues, right? Where one person is talking and another person is talking, but neither are listening. One is speaking and the other one is looking for the flaw in the argument.
Assuming that they're going to say what they always say. Huh?
One feels attacked and the other one's got to go on the defensive. And that breaks down the communication. But so often, Jan, when couples do come in, I mean, they, on their intake, what do you need? What do you hope counseling can do for you? It is usually, I hope we can communicate better. But it's not that we don't know as human beings how to communicate. We don't know how to communicate in a healthy and effective way that brings about attachment and connection. Most conflict communication brings more distress, fear, and loneliness, right? If you and I are arguing with each other and yet we're supposed to be good friends, and now I'm throwing bombs at you and you're throwing bombs at me, I'm feeling there's no safe or secure space. And so healthy and effective communication is let's throw out the monologues. There's got to be one speaker, one listener, and the goal is to listen, to hear. Mm-hmm. I think this is as much a micro issue for listening to your own inner voice. And as Marie says, you know, she comes from a, probably a similar theoretical background as I do. All the answers we need are within. And so one of the images I've always used for all my training in counseling is, in many ways, we're just midwives. We're just helping birth something that's already there.
Oh.
Right?
I like that.
But I don't do the work. I just help coach my clients through. My couples know how to love each other.
Most of them do.
Most of them do, but they have forgotten how. Instead of pushing, they're holding their breath. Instead of going towards each other with love, they're turning away from each other. And the reason I say that, and I'm so confident, they got married in the first place. There was some connection. There was some, and it wasn't miserable for most couples. It wasn't miserable right from out of the gate.
You don't meet most people that are shotgun weddings.
There's a few. There's a few out there.
I would think, you know.
Not as
family
many.
Expectations.
Well, family
but anyway.
Expectations, yeah. But even that, some make it work and some don't. And some that fell madly in love and had the romance of a lifetime and all the high school students saw this is they're going to be live for happily ever after. And they crash and burn.
You know, I'm laughing in my head, thinking one of the keys to a successful marriage might be separate bathrooms.
Well, that too.
Yet, I'm kidding about that, but the ability to have that relaxed space, you know, to where you're not just always irritated about little things. Is it little things that build up? Or do you see the whole spectrum of, you know, that's what I picture over time. People just are like, oh, what they thought was cute before is just... Too much after 20 years, or maybe 1 year.
Well, usually the very thing that we're attracted to in our partner eventually turns us off.
Is it?
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Early on in my own training, I remember having a couple where I asked the husband, you know, what attracted you to start dating her? And he said, you know what? She was so organized. She knew where everything was.
No.
She planned everything out. I was this terrible student. She got me organized. She got me through college. I mean, I could just see. And then I asked her, you know, what's the thing that attracted you to him? And he was like, oh, he was carefree. He just kind of did whatever he wanted. Well, 5 years down the road.
A nag and a slob.
That just drives the other one crazy. Right. Now, God, you got to know everything. You got to know everything I'm doing, wherever we're going. Can't we just relax? And the other one says, you never plan anything.
And you're
same
like,
person.
That was the same.
Same
yeah.
person.
Uh-huh.
Right. And
I've seen that with friends.
But when we then start going on that defensive and really the attack mode, we cannot communicate in a healthy way that honors that space, whether it's your bathroom space or just some quiet time. Or oftentimes, introverts are very much attracted to extroverts and extroverts to introverts. Well, then down the road, you know, why can't we stay at the party till they close the door? And the introvert's saying, why can't we leave before we get there?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anybody. I don't want to sit there. And
it's obvious to others, but not when you're in that relationship.
Right. And so to be able to tap in and find that inner resilience, that inner communication with yourself, with your lover, your partner, with your children, means you have to enter into dialogue, right? Well, that's what's been lost in the mini micro, right? At times when one side is against the other, no one's listening. There's no dialogue. We're seeing it nationally, right? Politically, we're seeing it around the world. But it comes back to this very same place. When we feel not safe, not attached, not secure within ourselves or our relationship, we go into a fight or flight response. And then we act out of that fight or flight response, which is usually a reaction rather than a response. Mm-hmm. Right? A doctor gives me medicine and calls me the next day, and I say, oh, doc, I'm having a reaction to the medicine. That's most of the time not good. But if doc gives me medicine and the next day doc calls me and I say, oh, I'm responding well. Are we working with the other person or are we fighting against the other person, right? Are we fighting with, are we working with ourselves? Are we fighting ourselves?
How do you inspire people to maybe take a break and just get out of that fight or flight mode, at least for a while, so they can get their thoughts together and figure out where they are and what they want? Is that a place that you start with?
It's one of the places.
Because I bet when people come in,
they're combative. When you're in fight or flight, you're not breathing. Yeah. You are in a reactive space. You're working from the amygdala, the survival part of your brain. You know, it's interesting. The only first successful treatment that will help all that is breath, to breathe. And it's not inhaling. It's the exhale. Because now you disrupt the reaction, the instinct of fight or flight. When you're in fight or flight, you inhale more, okay, and your blood pressure is up and your heart rate is up and everything is because it is looking for the bear that it's got to either run from or fight. But if there is no bear, it's just going to keep due diligent. But when you take in that breath and you hold it and then slowly let it out and you do that four or five times, you begin to interrupt the pattern that's going on within you. And you can begin to find that de-escalation of anxiety and distress. And so it's not just, well, just breathe and everyone goes, and then they hold their breath. Well, that creates more anxiety because your lungs and your heart are going, are we ever going to get oxygen again? Mm-hmm. But when it's that long exhale, you begin to release that, but you then also change what's going on in the neurotransmitters. And you're moving from kind of an unconscious place of panic and fear to a conscious place of being centered in the present moment, in the now, right, in your breath. And then the next thing I encourage people to do is once you get there, stay there for 10 or 15 minutes of quiet, of breathing, whether you use, you know, and I like silence as best as we can to not have those distractions. But if you need those meditation apps of music that goes back and forth, you can breathe with it. If you just need a guided song to just quiet you, the first real intervention is to calm your nervous system. And so you have to separate from the distressor. So if it's your kid that's driving you crazy or your spouse that's driving you crazy or your boss, you've got to find a way to extricate yourself from that, find yourself in a safe enough space, move into a breathing pattern that begins to calm, and you'll feel the state change within you.
It's like yoga. I mean, it's the same. It is yoga.
What we know even from the Old Testament is God breathed life, right? So where is God to be found? In breath.
Right. Be still and know I am God.
Be still and know I am God. And, you know, even our Jewish brothers and sisters, they don't say the word Yahweh, but they can do it with a breath. It can sound Yahweh.
I never thought about that. Yahweh.
It becomes a breath.
Yeah.
Right? Jesus breathed on them. Mm-hmm. The Holy Spirit, we say, breathe on me, heavenly God. Breath is that very essence of where life happens. And that's God's life within us. That's our own life within us. It's your life within you. And I can take my life within me and connect it with the life in you. And we can co-regulate that. Or we can co-escalate.
Very easily, either way, yeah.
Right.
So you counsel people You take them where they are. You give them these principles. And obviously you go from there. I read, and you were explaining that you were trained in the Franciscan. Are you a lay?
Lay Franciscan.
Lay Franciscan. Yeah. How does that interplay your spiritual faith with the words you're using and the thoughts, the care that your heart is giving to other hearts?
Well, Jan, you said it. It isn't so much the words I use or a faith I'm trying to proclaim. It's my heart that has been formed, converted, still being converted, still changing by my own faith, which is really the Franciscan way of life is really about humility, is really about love of neighbor, finding God in all of creation, in that creation is actually the representation, the fingerprint of God, right? And so when people come to see me, whether their faith is strong or whether it's weak, whether they feel like they have no love for somebody or too much love for somebody, if that's possible, I, again, like you said, try and meet them where they're at. And then my goal is just to accept them for who they are, not who they think they should be or their other person thinks they should be or even who I think they should be, but connect with them to see, you know, the God living in me connecting with the God living in them and seeing if they can tap that and how, again, we bring birth or rebirth to that even.
Yeah.
And so my Franciscan spirituality is much more about the engine that's pulling or the engine that's running my therapeutic mindset. But there are you can pretty much go to our website. You can even come in here, and unless you ask me, we're not going to bring up faith unless you bring it up.
It might scare people at first.
It could. But again, there's people who have grown up with faith all their life, and it's toxic to them, or it's traumatizing to them.
Yeah.
And some people have used faith, more religion, not faith, but religion as a crutch to avoid stuff.
Yeah.
And so I want love to be the center, because that's where God is found, in love, right? Mm-hmm. And if we encounter love, then love will purify and bring out what needs to happen.
I love this. On one of your websites, I know you have danjurek.com and then the PAX Renewal Center, but I read that your mission in life is inspired by the words of St. Francis of Assisi. We have been called to heal wounds, to unite what has fallen apart, and to bring home any who have lost their way. And that's a deep spiritual belief, not any one religion. It's kindness and love.
It is. It is the...
Everybody loves St. Francis.
I think it's just... Well, and that's why he is the lover of
the believer
and not, right?
Yeah.
But it's only because, and you know, and God bless us all, we've kind of reduced St. Francis to the blessing of the pets, which is okay.
It's a beautiful thing, though, I have to tell you.
It is. It's a beautiful thing, and yet it's just the very tip of his iceberg, because it is really founded in this thing of saying every human being is an image of God, and I've got to see that person, and if they feel lost, I got to go find them and bring them back, not just to religion, but to their very core, which is where God made them in his image and likeness. And then maybe they can love themselves in that space because they've already experienced the belovedness. And then we can take that love to, okay, well, how do we bring love back to the marriage? How do we bring love back into the family?
If we love ourselves, if we're able to, you know, put aside all the stressors, the I should be this, I'm not good enough. If we can get past those things and realize we were created in the image of God, and that's pretty darn good.
It's incredible.
It's perfect. Are we then able to love easier? I know this sounds trite, but is it about the individual first and not just fixing the couple's dynamic?
You know, that too, again, and this is just me, Jan, it's a both and.
I want answers, Dan.
I know. And I'm giving you the answer, just not the one that you might really want. Oftentimes in a couple relationship, it is the relationship that needs the healing. And so it necessitates both people. And that's my training as a systemic therapist. I see the couple as mm-hmm. one, right? And so if the couple is dancing and one steps on the other's toe, I don't just say, okay, you, wife, go learn the dance on your own. Husband, you learn the dance on your own, and then you come back and you'll be fine, right? No, it is in the dance that brings about the distress.
And the unity, the
and so
the lack of unity.
I want to keep couples together when they come and work on whatever issues there, whether it is more his or more hers, because it affects each other in the dance of their relationship. Yes, there are times when they need to do some individual work, maybe some from some trauma from family of origin or some other struggle they're going through that will help them be in the dance differently. But Jan, every person brings in and every couple brings in their own unique space. And my job is to find out what is the unique problem to this unique person or this unique couple? And let's find a solution for that unique person. And if it is individual counseling, great. But if it is just staying in here, and I want you, husband, to hear your wife's story. I don't want her to tell somebody else and you not hear it. Mm-hmm. I want you, husband, to tell the story of growing up so that she can understand more. When we do that, it allows the couple again to come together in a way that it wouldn't work if we just sent them their own way.
Dan Jurek, I could go on another hour. Unfortunately, I know you have a time commitment mm-hmm. here, so we're going to need to wind down our interview. Is there any parting message or thought you'd like to share?
And this will sound trite. Be kind to one another. Be kind to yourself. If you're struggling, ask for help. If a relationship isn't going well, don't keep doing what you're doing. Ask for help. But do it out of kindness. There's too much anger. There's too much animosity. There's too much hatred. And then we start seeing the people that we love as our enemy. Let's put our eyes of kindness on them.
Thank you. Those are beautiful words. Dan Jurek of PAX Renewal Center and a licensed professional counselor working with couples in particular has been our guest. Thank you, Dan.
Welcome.
Thanks to our listeners. Our show has been made possible by our continuing sponsors of First Iberia Bank, which is now a part of First Horizon, and Ochsner Lafayette General. And last but not least, Raider Solutions. Jason, thank you so much. Jason Sikora mixes our tape, and my friend Chris Raider has made this show possible for almost 4 years now. Please visit our website at discoverlafayette.net, and even better, subscribe. We release a new podcast every week, and you can hear wonderful interviews such as the one we just did with Dan Jurek. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, thank you. This is Jan Swift.